Welcome to another episode of Charros y Clásicos, a Bosque Strings podcast. I'm your host, Miguel Gutierrez, and I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Joel Ozuna.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. Today's guest is from the Starr County area. She has a bachelor's in music education from UTRGV, formerly known as the University of Texas Pan American. She is a former mariachi and orchestra teacher from Roma ISD. Currently, she's an entrepreneur and founder of Starr Music Academy in Rio Grande City. Please welcome Corinne Maldonado.
Hi, guys. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for coming over. Sorry.
Finally. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I'm glad that we're finally recording again.
Yes.
It's been a crazy month with so much going on, and we haven't had a chance to sit and do this. Right, Joel?
Yeah. This month, it's been crazy with TMEA, and then we had some region auditions.
Yeah, just a bunch of craziness. And but yeah, we're back. And what's cool about this month is we decided to feature women in music. So we chose you, Corinne, to be our first.
I feel so honored.
So, well, I'm thankful that you're here and you came all the way from, you know, Rio Grande City to join us here for this interview. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It was a good day for a drive. We have a nice weather today.
Yeah, not so cold anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So what's new with you? What's going on? Tell us about what's going on right now.
I have just been in the middle of lessons. Well, I had COVID 2 weeks ago, kind of put like a halt to everything, but thankfully it was not a severe case. My husband and I are fine. So I was finally able to get back in the studio. And we're in the middle of a busy season for my students. I am an active member of our local music teacher association here in the Valley, Magic Valley. And we work through the Texas Music Teacher Association and MTNA, the National Association, to bring a lot of programs to our students. Mm. So this is our busy season. We just had a theory test. Next weekend, we're auditioning students for our piano ensemble that represents our association at the state conference. And now we're also learning our World of Music curriculum for the March exam for our students. So we have been learning about composers and the instruments of the orchestra, famous works. So it's always a fun time. I really love sharing that with the students. And for a lot of them, it's their first time ever being exposed to that classical side of music. So it's always really fun. And it's funny that you say that this month you're featuring women, because we started the curriculum of learning the composers. And my female students always say, "Miss, these are all guys. There's no girls here." And my response is, you have to become such a great musician that there's no way that they can deny you entrance into this group. I said, it's up to you. You guys have to be the ones to change it so that someday we'll be studying all about you and the music that you brought to us. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's very well put. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and start firing questions. So my first question is, this has nothing to do with public school, right? This is strictly from the private end of things?
Yes, I'm a private music teacher. I actually see most of my students in groups. I have mostly piano students, but I also have a violin studio and some guitar students and voice students also that I see every week.
How long have you had this studio going on now?
I actually started teaching students when I was back in high school, and it's always something I did on the side, like throughout college. I always had a few private students, and even when I started teaching in the public schools, I always had a few students on the side that would come over to my house. But once I went into it full time, I started in about 2016, 2015 was when I had the seed of the idea of jumping into it. And ever since then, it's just taken off, and it's been a really fun adventure. I've really liked exploring this side of music education.
And were you afraid to make that jump, that leap?
It is scary, like not having a regular paycheck, losing my health insurance, stuff like that. And I remember telling my parents, and my dad had always told me, when I got hired at Roma, he said, that's where you're going to be. Stick with it. Like, you got a good job. Don't give that up. So when I told my parents, hey, I'm going to do this, they were kind of skeptical at first. Mm. But yeah, they came around, and after these last few years, they have seen how, it is possible to do this as a career.
Yeah.
And it's very rewarding. I love that I can set my own schedule and, that I'm working with kids who all want to be there, and it's been really great. So
it's interesting you bring that up, because, you know, you and I went to school together, mm-hmm. when it was still Pan Am, and you can recall that when we were there, we were told you need to go through this route. Mm-hmm. Because this is the only way you'll survive.
Or yeah, exactly.
We're investing in stability, right? Mm-hmm. We were taught that there was no career or no future if we decided to do things that we're doing now. And in a way that you kind of inspired me in doing what I'm doing. Like, I'm also a private teacher and I don't regret it. It's probably the best thing I've ever decided to do. So thanks for that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I'm so proud of all your students. I've actually got to inherit a few of your kids and
that's
they're
right.
great students. So I know that you have a good foundation there and that's awesome.
I only strive to be the best or good, right? So let's talk about, because you mentioned parents. So let's talk about the origin, how you came to be. So tell us of your background. When did you decide to engage in music in your life?
Well, my mom's side of the family is very musical, and my grandmother played the violin briefly, and she also played the piano, the organ a little bit. And my mom played the piano, and she played clarinet in band, and she was really good. And it was always something we were surrounded by. I know other grandmas, my cousin's grandma on the other side would buy her Barbies and all these toys and stuff. And I always felt bummed out because my grandma bought us books. She bought us cassette tapes and CDs. But I appreciate that so much because both my mom and my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, always brought us up around literature, art, music. We spent a lot of time at the library and we were always singing. My dad's side too, my grandparents on my dad's side. So my mom is from the RGV. She's from the Valley. She's Anglo. My dad is from Nuevo Laredo. And so on that side of my family is where I get my Hispanic roots. And my paternal grandparents always encouraged, they knew I liked to sing and my grandmother would teach me songs. And I learned Allá en el Rancho Grande when I was really small. And I always loved to sing. And I have a brother and a sister. Once we got to the age where we were all kind of in school, my mom wanted to go back to work. And my aunt had started teaching group piano lessons at her home. She converted her garage into a studio. And that kind of inspired my mom to do the same. So when I was in second grade, I remember we all shared one bedroom. And my mom turned the big bedroom into a studio. And they went to Best Buy. She bought four keyboards. Later, we went to San Antonio. She bought a piano at Alamo Music. They delivered it all the way to Zapata. And every afternoon, my mom had piano students there at our house in the little studio that she built. So it was a great beginning. I always had support.
And would you say that that also was what influenced you to start your own studio?
Oh, yeah, definitely. In third grade, they asked us what we wanted to be when we grew up. And I said music teacher. And I still remember some of my classmates. I remember one of my friends from high school. That time she said ice skater, figure skater. She's not a figure skater now. but I am a music teacher. And that's kind of cool that I've always kind of known my path. And all the way through school and high school, I always knew that that was something I really wanted to do.
So I have a little story I've never told you of how I first knew of you or had an idea of who Corinne was. So I don't remember the year. It must have been like 2002 or 3, but there was this like mariachi competition going on in Harlingen, and I remember sitting in the audience, and Zapata was there, and that's when I first saw you. I don't remember what, you must have been like a junior or something, and I don't know what song y'all were playing, but you played the solo, and I said, oh yeah, that girl, she's really good. And it took years later, like in college, to realize, oh yeah, you're the girl that I saw. And so that's how, like, you stood out to me in college.
At my parents' house, there was a VHS tape of that competition. Joelle is there with the UTPA. You're there at Economides.
So you remember it.
That, consider those to me, that's like the golden age of, like, mariachi competition.
Yeah.
I feel like that, there was so much drama and excitement. There was so much competition and, like, I say rivalry, but honestly, like, we were all friends.
But it was friendly rivalry, yeah.
We all inspired each other, and so many great educators have come out of that generation. But, yeah, I need to find that video. We need to have a watch party sometime because
that would be awesome.
We will all see people we know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so you do recall it. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and since then, I just knew about Corinne, and it was just, like, from another world. I'm surprised you remember that, too. That's cool.
Yeah, those are good times.
So when did you, like, go into mariachi?
So,
I guess that's why I'm bringing this up.
Yeah, I think in our district, we started in seventh grade. And I had wanted to join band, and my mom had been in band. And my mom was kind of like, they practice so much, and every Friday football game. And they kind of, you know, tried to push me in a different direction. So in seventh grade, they came to ask us if we wanted to join mariachi. And when I was younger, we had watched, my mom used to check it out of the library, the Linda Ronstadt. Canción es de mi padre.
Yeah.
And I knew those songs. And to me, like, just her outfits and her costumes. And Maria, later I learned, well, she played, like, Vargas is the one that plays with her in that. production, and it's just super awesome. So that was the picture I had in my mind of what a mariachi was. And I asked, can I join this? And they were like, okay, yeah, you can try it, see how it goes. So that's what I did. We signed up. I know my mom and dad rented me a violin for a few months, but then when they saw I was going to stick with it, they bought me my first violin out of the JCPenney catalog.
Wow.
And I had that violin all through middle school. And then when I was going to join high school mariachi, I remember we drove up to San Antonio and we went over there and we got a better instrument.
Better instrument.
Yeah. So I started in seventh grade. Our teachers were really great. They were very old school. It was a lot of oral instruction. I had the advantage that I knew how to read music, so they could give me sheet music and I would figure it out and then I would just kind of show everybody else.
Mm.
And our teachers were not string players, so it was kind of like, here's an essential elements book, go in this room and come out when you know what to do.
When you know it by heart.
Yeah, so I mean, music, technical wise, I was kind of a mess for a long time because it was so much just self-taught and not a lot of background, but musical wise I was always okay. I mean, I could read music, and that helped me a lot, I think, in that journey. And I've always had a good ear and could follow along, so that helped too. But I'm grateful I had that piano background, because I don't know if I would have gotten much farther without it.
Yeah, I remember being in college and you always mentioned how, you know, piano was your first instrument. Mm-hmm. And you would always fall back to that whenever it came to theory tests, mm-hmm. or even your own practicing in your instrument on the violin. So
yeah, it was really helpful. I have students now where parents ask me, what instrument should I start on?
Mm-hmm.
And I always say it doesn't really matter. It should be what the child wants to do. But if they really don't know, I said, just get them started on the piano. And then from there, they have a really good foundation for another instrument.
With everything.
Yeah.
So then you're in mariachi in high school for a while. And so you're still thinking, I'm going to do this. I'm still going to go into music, right?
Yeah, that was always my dream. When my senior year, I know they had the principals call me in a couple of times, the counselors, are you sure you want to do this? And I just got this vibe that they didn't think it was like a credible thing. I was told, you don't like anything else? And I said, well, I was in accounting. I liked that class. My accounting teacher would tell me, oh, you should do this. And I liked it, but I couldn't see myself doing that as a job, like, all day. Like, it was kind of boring. And I also kind of liked architecture. My dad worked in construction. Growing up in the summers, I used to go help him. That kind of also spoke to me. And they would tell me, you can be in architecture and just play music on the side. You don't have to. But I stuck to it because I was like, no, this is what I want to do. And then they also told me, oh, your class ranking's going to go down. Because they had these medical classes you could take, and they would give you extra points for your ranking. And they kept telling me, take those classes. I said, I don't want to be anything in the medical field. It's like a waste of time for me. But they said, no, but for your ranking. And so then I found out that they had AP Music Theory, and I asked if we could have AP Music Theory, and then I could get extra points for my ranking. And I was told, that's not fair to all the students that don't read music. Then you get extra points that they don't. And I was like, hello, that's exactly what those medical classes are for me, but okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I graduated. I ended up being third in my class.
Mm.
I missed salutatorian at the very, the December cutoff. But honestly, that wasn't important to me because I just wanted to study music and get better.
You're following your passion.
Yeah, exactly.
So when did you start university?
That fall, I graduated high school in 2005, and I started right away in the fall. And I really liked San Marcos. We had gone over there for state solo and ensemble when I was in high school, and I loved that campus. But my parents, I'm the oldest child, and my parents did not go to college. My grandmother did. As an adult, she went back to school. She became an elementary teacher, middle school teacher. So my parents didn't really have that college experience, and they were a little nervous. So they encouraged me to go somewhere where I had family. So that kind of narrowed me down to San Antonio, Laredo, or the Valley. And I really liked UTPA, the music program. Seeing like the UTPA mariachis when we would go compete, that was like really inspiring. And so since I had an uncle that lived in Donna and my grandmother lived there, they said, okay, you can go for that. So I moved into my grandma's house and I started commuting from Donna to Edinburgh for those 4 years. Yeah.
Wow. So you were housed basically.
Yeah. I lived there and my parents had that peace of mind that I was close to family and they could keep an eye on me. And I got to go to a school that I really wanted to go to. So that was cool too.
So tell us about your experience going through the music program at UTPA.
It was an experience. I was fine. Like, I had my piano background, so, like, piano proficiency was no trouble. I finished that really quickly. Theory classes also weren't a big deal because I had gone through a lot of theory. I had a good theory background from my piano classes. What I really struggled in was my technique, and that's what really almost made me change my mind a couple of times. You might have been there, Miguel, one time at a Burger King. I remember crying with my other string quartet members and saying, I'm just going to go change it. I'm just going to be an English major and accounting major.
Yes, I was there a couple times with you when you had your breakdowns.
Yes, you know? They were very tough. But you always encouraged me. All you guys were super encouraging. And I think it was just a matter of I'm a people pleaser, and I was always used to getting even maybe a little bit of like a teacher's pet or a brown noser, and always used to figuring out like what a teacher wanted to hear. And it was so hard for me to figure out what my professors wanted from me, especially like my private lesson teacher. But once I figured it out, not like what he wanted to hear, but once I adjusted to his teaching style and I realized what I needed to do to get better, after that, it was just like an uphill trajectory. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for Dr. Bangan, for Dr. Seitz, for Dr. Dawson, and I forget her name, that she was there for 1 year, but they were so good. They helped me so much to really, I feel like I spent my 4 years really just learning how to play almost from scratch, just because I had to unlearn so many bad habits. Mm. But I know that that made me a better teacher because I can spot those habits now from a mile away, and I know how to fix them because I went through that same process of having to unlearn a bad habit. So I'm really grateful for that. And then just the opportunity to, I had never played in an orchestra or a chamber group. And I also got to do some other fun things. I got to be in the jazz band and the opera workshop. So just the opportunity to explore different genres and different styles of music was really great.
That's a very incredible and inspiring story, because a lot of people have gone through what you've gone through and they throw in the towel, you know, or they just don't show up anymore. They change their major or just decide to go in the working industry. But you sharing that story, I mean, it's possible. It's just a matter of, you know, staying focused.
It's totally focused. Possible. And just always willing to accept that there's always going to be someone better than you, but you can learn from them.
Right.
And that it's not always about competing and who's the best, but about just being the best version of yourself and always improving yourself. That's what I always try to encourage my students to do. Don't worry about what the person next to you is playing. You worry about yourself and just always trying to be better.
It's funny that usually at the end, I always ask for words of encouragement, and I think you already beat me to it.
There they are.
So tell us, what year did you graduate from university?
In 2009.
And what did you do after that?
And then I looked for jobs for a while, and I ended up getting hired for that school year in Roma ISD.
Were you excited to head back to Stark County?
I was.
Was that like a dream position or?
Well, for me, it was kind of like almost full circle, just because when we were growing up, Roma's like probably the closest town to Zapata, and we admired them so much. Our goal was always we have to beat Roma and mariachi. I made really good friends there. I actually, all through college, I was very familiar with the area and with the people because I ended up playing in a professional mariachi, and it was based out of Roma. So a lot of my friends became my coworkers and my colleagues because it felt very natural. It felt almost like coming home or to a second home to start working in that district. So that was good. I'm glad that that's where I ended up.
And so you started as a mariachi director in Roma ISD, correct?
Yeah, so it was 3 campuses, 2 middle schools and a high school, and there were 2 other directors. So I ran Roma Middle School, and then my colleagues ran the other middle school and the high school, and we all kind of team taught. It was a really great team because I was the violin person, and then we had Danny Renteria, who's an awesome, amazing Grammy-nominated trumpet player. And then I got to work with Dr. Noe Sanchez, whose focus in our program was the harmonia, but he really is kind of a jack-of-all-trades. He plays a little bit of everything, and he's also a really great, I'm really glad I got to work with him just because he's done so much for like the mariachi education world as far as like a curriculum and really setting out goals and plans for how we can make mariachi a very well-rounded subject or musical study area. We always kind of got backlash. I know I did, coming not from an orchestra but from a mariachi background, into college, into university setting. There was always that kind of like, oh, you play mariachi, you don't play classical, or you didn't do this, or you didn't learn that. But Dr. Sanchez was really great because he's always encouraged us to try and teach just music, but we're approaching it through that lens of mariachi as the performance outlet. But I was really glad that I got to work with that team because I learned so much from Danny and Noe, and I still consider them really great friends and colleagues to this day because they were really great to work with.
Awesome.
How long were you at Roma?
I was there, I want to say 6 years, 6.5, teaching mariachi. And then there was a point where I was ready to move on to try something different, but I was going to turn in my resignation when the fine arts director said, what if we start an orchestra? And that was something exciting for me. We had always encouraged our mariachi students, we would always give them the option of auditioning for all-region orchestra, and we would take them to solo and ensemble. So I thought that would be a really good move for the district. It would also, mariachi is kind of it's almost a chamber group if you think about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have 60-piece mariachi groups. It's kind of what makes the difference between like band and orchestra. You can take everybody, but then when you have a mariachi ensemble, you're kind of limited. So I thought it'd be a great opportunity because we could encourage more students to learn a stringed instrument and be able to play and participate. So I went for it. And once again, Dr. Sanchez was also going that route, and he was starting orchestra and classical guitar at the high school. And so I got to do it at the middle schools.
So you guys were the first orchestra teachers there in Roma.
Yeah, there had been students before we even had some all-staters, but they were always mariachi-based students out of the mariachi program. So it was the first time that we started that string program there. So it was really fun to build something from the ground up.
And that's the only string program that I could think of in the Starr County area.
Yeah, the other districts
Rio Grande
in Starr
doesn't
County
have it.
Don't have orchestra.
Rio Grande and La Gruya doesn't have it.
They don't have, yeah. Wow, and so it didn't take long then? You just, the next year immediately?
Yeah, I actually started in December. So halfway through the year. So that first semester, we just had violins. But then when we started the following school year, we showed them the other instruments. We started viola, cello, and bass too. And we had so much support. The district was super supportive. So we had instruments, we had formals. The kids were able to do all the events and even take some trips and stuff. So
I was going to ask, because so many other places, you know, don't have the funds to immediately get cello, bass, like the bigger instruments. And it's surprising how, you know, a school like Roma ISD was able to just, here you go.
Roma is an amazing district for the arts. And my administrators and the principals, the leadership at the district were always super supportive. And especially because orchestra was something new. Even some of the admin or the principals were kind of, they didn't know what is orchestra. So it was really fun to be able to teach them that, to show. And it was always fun going to recruit, like with the elementary students, to show them what the orchestra was, the instruments, the different things. It was really great to open their eyes to other opportunities that they could have for music.
So you said you were in Roma for 6 years. Does that include your time in the orchestra?
I did orchestra for 2.5. It was like 5.5 or 6.5 years in the mariachi. And then I rounded out about 2.5 years doing the orchestra program.
So in total, like 9 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And what made you decide to open up your own studio?
Well, like I said before, I always had private students on the side. And I had always had the goal of, one of my life goals or dreams was that of owning like a music school, a music academy. My mom's piano studio at home like really inspired me, and I had always wanted to do that. It was always something I had in the back of my mind. So one year I went for it. I found a space. I got a business license. I put a bank account. I was just doing step by step, and I started advertising. That was the thing. I always had students, but I never advertised. It just kind of spread by word of mouth. So my thing was, if I actually try to get students, what's going to happen? So for 1 year, I actually did both. I taught every day at school till 4, 5, 6 p.m., and then I would go to my studio, and I taught an evening of students, and also on the weekends I was teaching, because I wanted to see if it was feasible. And after that first year of doing both, I sat down and I crunched the numbers, and I realized I can do this, and I can have a pretty decent life, make basically what I'm making now, but have more freedom and more flexibility and more time. So it was really scary, but I went for it. I turned in my letter of resignation. It was hard because I really liked what we were growing in Roma, but I also felt like at this point in my life, I was ready to try something new, like try a new challenge, a new endeavor, and I went for it.
So another question that I have, because a lot of people have asked me, they've come in through our store here, in our previous place of employment, people from that area, and they would say, well, we're looking for a private teacher. Is there anyone you would recommend? And I've always told them, well, go to this person. But in correlation to that, you know, a lot of people that I have told that have said, oh, so there's interest there in that area. So did you ever find like some sort of difficulty getting students into the studio?
Absolutely not.
Or interest. So there is an interest
there is
in Rio Grande City.
There is a huge interest. Like I said, most of my students are piano students, and that's what I get most of the calls for. There's like a huge, and there have been other teachers off and on, and I would always, my studio filled up maybe after 3 or 4 years, I was having to start a waiting list. And I had other teachers that I would always send, but no one has ever stuck with it. So they end up coming back to me after even the other teachers leave, and then they join my waiting list again. But yeah, there's a huge interest. And then I also, since I taught orchestra, I'm able to teach viola, cello, and I've had students ask for viola lessons, for cello lessons. I have a ukulele student, so that's really fun. And because of the mariachi programs, I get students that learned in school but want private instruction. And now in Rio, there is an elementary music program, which I'm so excited about, because before it was always starting my kiddos from scratch. They had no... If they didn't come from a family where music was part of the daily routine, they had no background. But now there's an elementary music program in Rio ISD, and I really hope that Roma will pick that up soon too, because that is really, really great for kids. I like that I get to start them from the very beginning and to watch that growth. And then my studio's gotten to the point where my students are older, so I have a lot of middle school and high school kids that have gone into the mariachi, to the orchestra, to the band programs. And it's really exciting to see like how they've grown. The band gets all my pianists. They all join percussion. And I love going to see the drum line because they're all like my kids. And it's so fun to see what other things they're able to do with the music background they get.
So in the growing aspect of your studio, I mean, how long has your studio been on now?
It's, 6 years. This is the sixth year.
So when did you see, okay, I need to hire more people? Because at first, I'm assuming it was just you, right?
Yeah. So it's been just me. And then my issue has always been, since we're so out there, it's hard to find people who are willing to commit. So I've hired, over the summers, I've hired former students when they're back home from college and they've helped me out. I've off and on, sometimes I have an office assistant or someone who helps me with cleaning or just with events, because we do a lot of recitals and things with the kids, and it always helps to have extra adults. But going through the hiring process and all that, I realized that while, yes, I love running my business the way I like to, I really just like teaching. And so that's really been my focus. And so now when I now that I have this growing list, whenever I have former students ask me, are you hiring? Or even just ask me what they should do for a career, I always tell them, you can do this. You can teach lessons and you can make a good living. And there's a huge interest in it. And that's kind of like I see my role now is kind of just like, I want to grow more teachers.
Yes.
I want to grow more private teachers, because it's a really, really great career and it's super rewarding and the interest is there. And it is a market that is waiting to be tapped.
Going back to what we said earlier, you know, when we were in college, I mean, not just in your area, but even here in like Edinburgh, McAllen, there's still not enough private teachers. Mm-hmm. And even I've had this conversation with fellow private teachers about how we need more. And because if we have more, then you'll have more students go into these arts.
Exactly.
There's a lot of kids who don't engage because, oh, well, I can't find a teacher to teach me harp, mm-hmm. pedal harp, or whatever instrument. So it's interesting to hear that even on that aspect, we do see that growth.
Yeah, it's definitely, I feel like it's something that there'll always be a need for. And I think part of the problem, I have a former student right now who's starting her own studio, and she said, it's just my parents think it's a side thing. They don't see it as like a career. And I think it's just having that shift, that mind shift, that this can be a career. And that's always informed my business decisions. I've always had a lesson contract. I have a website. I have a separate phone line for my business. I've always seen it as that. And I think that helps my students to take it seriously too. And also what helps me is having like goals in mind for my students, having a structured curriculum, a path I want them to get from here to here. And then it's not just something that I do randomly. I spend a lot of time outside. I mean, I teach 4 hours a day, basically, but I spend 2+ hours a day planning, preparing.
More than, right?
Yeah, or more, like, just so that I can give my students the best of me. I can teach them the best way that I can. And I don't think learning ever stops, even as a teacher. So I'm constantly attending workshops, doing networking, and learning more. My next goal now is I want to learn more about the Suzuki method. So I've gone through the first module of the teacher training. I'm preparing my audition so that I can continue my training. Because I feel like the more tools we have in our toolbox as teachers, the better we can reach every student.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I just want to always be able to help as many students as I can and learn from other master teachers.
Have you had any students already go into university?
I have, especially since I started in the public school. So I have several alumni students that are now teachers. That's always exciting. I actually have a private student that I was her mom's teacher when her mom was in high school. So she's like my little musical grandchild. And it's so fun getting to teach her now because I know her mom can help her at home. Her mom plays the violin. She's going to, you know, that little girl has a perfect setup to be successful on her instrument because she has someone at home that can practice with her and help her. So that's been really fun. And seeing my students, I always say that I know I've done my job right when they get better than me. Like, that's such a good feeling. I know that might be intimidating to some teachers or people, but for me, it's like, no, once they don't need me anymore, then I know that I did my job right.
You did your job. Yeah.
So seeing former students I have that are now recording artists, that are teachers, that are in bands and groups, and even if they didn't choose music as a career, but they still play, to me, that's just really rewarding.
That's amazing. That's what it's about in the end, right?
Exactly.
It's about, like I've told Joelle so many times, it's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are you going to be remembered? That's the main reason why I do what I do too.
Yeah.
So congrats to you on that.
Well, thank you.
Hey, so I also want to know this because I've asked a lot of people when they've come in to interview. So tell us how the pandemic affected your business.
It was really scary because nobody knew what was happening. The week everything started happening, I had parents call me and say, we're quitting. Just
really?
Right there. I lost a few, but I'm pretty active on social media with other music teachers. So I was looking to see what other teachers were doing. And I had already used Zoom for volunteer work that I do. So I was familiar with the platform. And so we just pivoted. And I let all the parents know, hey, we're not going to stop. We're just going to switch to a different way of teaching. And the first few Zoom lessons, especially because a lot of my students are in group classes, it was interesting working out. And it was a learning curve for both us, the parents, the teachers, the students. But I was really proud because I actually felt like we still progressed. My students still learned. I did, once we were able to go back to fully in-person lessons, there's little things I've picked up. Mostly like posture position things that you just can't fix through a screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of my older students, I honestly did not see their faces the whole pandemic. And cameras off. But they were there. And if they would play me something and they were playing the right notes, my goal was just for music to be something that they looked forward to, that could be like an escape for them, like a safe place. Mm-hmm. I didn't want it to be. I think that also helped my mind shift a little bit. I'm very competitive and I want my students to do well. But going through the pandemic made me realize that we all need things that are a comfort to us and places where we feel safe and not judged. And I think the pandemic helped me to help my students to see that music could be that place where they could just be. And I actually had my studio stayed full. I lost a few, but I gained a few. And even now I have some students that, I mean, I prefer in person, of course, with all my students, but I have some students that still use Zoom and they're great. Those lessons are great, and I got to use a lot of different technology tips and tricks. So I learned a whole bunch of different cool stuff to do. We did games. We did a recital entirely on Zoom. We did several recitals all on Zoom, and those were so great, too. We had the biggest audiences because all the family members from out of town, everyone could log in and watch, so that was really fun. And we still got to do a lot of our events, too, through the TMTA. We were able to do tests, and even our piano ensemble teams got to record and do video versions of their performances. So it mostly was a learning experience, but I feel like now I have more tools, more trade. I feel like if someday my husband and I want to just go live in an RV and drive all over the United States, I could just teach students online. And I feel like I would be prepared to do that. And that could be, it made me realize like our space, I had spent so many years making like a beautiful space for my students to learn. And then in a matter of weeks, that wasn't even, we didn't need it. It wasn't useful. My studio was so quiet for those year and a half that we were shut down. But it was really nice to welcome them back in again. So
it lasted a year and a half, you could say?
I would follow the school district. So okay. The school went online right away in March. In summer, we tried. We did go back, and then things got bad again. So we shut down again. And that whole school year, 2020 through 2021, was all through Zoom. And then the following summer, we tried again, and I gave students the option. Because then the school went through a hybrid model. So some kids were in school, some kids were on Zoom. So I kind of did that the following year. And now we're pretty back to almost all my students.
Back to normal.
Back to normal. But we always have that option. So if a kid doesn't have a ride that day, if I'm sick or they're sick, if they're out of town, I don't have to cancel the lesson. Like we can just
It keeps going.
Yeah, we can keep going. So it was good to have that extra tool in the toolbox.
So what's your future projection for your studio?
I want to just get better at teaching. I just want to keep on learning. I want my students to keep improving. I'm at a place now where I have, the perfect schedule. I teach Monday through Friday, 4:30 to 8:30. And then I have time for my family and for other things, but I also get to do what I love. And in the future, I kind of like the path that we're on, and I really like the families that I have. We've built, like, it feels like a community, mm-hmm. and I just kind of want to keep that going. And so just keep accepting students when I can and helping my students to become the best musicians they can be. I've always kind of seen it as my students will get to the point where they can kind of mentor or work under me, like, what's the word, like interns. That's kind of my goal. As I get my students get older and older, I have my eye on some. And I'm like, okay, when these ones get into high school, if this is something they want to do, they have their place here. They can shadow. And maybe eventually if they want to become teachers, you can take them on or something. But honestly, I really just like the solo teacher life. For me, that works really well. And teaching, I like teaching in groups. And I do have my private students. Sometimes they age out of a group, or as students move on to other activities, I might not have a lot of students at that level. So those students end up coming one-on-one. But they really like the times when we do group things, when we get ready for group performances or we have some sort of event. So I really like that. And I really want to solidify, as I've taught through the years, and I teach different instruments, so I've always had to do a lot of research. And every time something new comes out, I always like to check it out to see, okay, how can I use this? How can I use this with my students? So I've been really trying to build like a master curriculum for my studio and what my students will go through and make sure that I'm covering all the bases that I want to cover that I feel are important as a teacher. So I see that too as something that I can work towards, just giving them the best music education possible.
So you as a... Now let's talk about the business owner aspect. What's the biggest difficulty you faced owning your studio?
Just learning to be like a good business owner. Whenever students ask me questions about like high school or what class was the best or what did I learn, and I think they expect me to say, oh, I like my mariachi class or my music class. But honestly, those 2 years of accounting that I took were the smartest thing I ever did in my life. And my mom kind of told me, she said, if they offer like an accounting or a business class, you should take it because it's helped me. And I did, and I liked it, and there was a part two, and I took part two. And I tell any high school kid, I said, if you ever think, even if you don't plan on owning a business, I feel like just going through that class made me, like, a better human. Like, just, it helped me to know, like, the steps I need to take to keep, like, my life together and my business running, like, financially.
The finances.
Yeah, the finance part, because that was really the hardest part. And then when I started, I don't think I had my focus yet because I was just so excited to get started. So since we live in kind of an area where there are no music stores or anything like that in like an hour radius, I thought, okay, I can sell instruments and strings and I can rent and I can. So I kind of started with a really wide net. But then as time went on, I started seeing the things that I liked, which for me was really just teaching. I like being a teacher. And so I've kind of let a lot of those other things fall by the wayside. I still keep a few things there in the studio for my own students. And I have a few customers that know they can get guitar strings or whatever for me. But that's really not my focus. I really just like teaching.
The teaching aspect.
Yeah. And it took a while. And some of those were expensive life lessons that you learn, like figuring out what you like. But I'm still glad that I did that. I got to see, okay, this is what I like and this is what I don't like. And sometimes you really don't know until you try something. So it was good to try. And I had also thought, you know, originally, oh, I want to have a bunch of teachers work under me and own a whole music school. And I have had teachers work for me, but I just like being me. And what gives me, being in a music teacher organization has really helped me, because then I do have colleagues. I have other teachers. There's no competition. We're all just really working. And everything we do is for our students. It's just for them to be better. So that has been a really good investment, I think, in my career, and something that I would encourage anyone, if you in your area, well, here in the Valley, we have Magic Valley music teachers, and any instrumental or vocal teachers welcome to join. And in other areas, Texas has a great network of independent music teacher, and also through the Suzuki organization. There's no local chapters, but if you're a Suzuki teacher, there's chapters in like Houston, North Texas area, any place where you can meet others, and then you're not so alone. You have coworkers. That was a really good choice that I made, joining MTNA and the local affiliate.
Wow, well, you seem very well versed in your information, you know, and I also want to congratulate you for that. I feel like, even though I haven't sat down with you and talked like this in a long time, I feel like, you know, it's still the same. You're still the same person. Because I remember that's why I liked talking to you back then. Like, you always knew everything about everything.
If I ever had
a question, I'd go to you. Okay, so how do we do this? How do I do this, right? And I still feel like that now. And so,
oh, I'm glad. And you're always welcome. I don't know it all, but I try my best. And if I don't know the answer, I usually know where to look. So it's a good start. And yeah, and I'm always open. If anyone that's listening wants to be a music teacher or is thinking about it as a career, I'm always open for anyone to pick my brain. I'm on Instagram and all that stuff at Star Music Academy. So just send me a message and we'll talk.
I just want to tell you that I think I mentioned this to you before, but you were one of my inspirations to opening the shop.
Oh my goodness.
I remember, I think before I opened, I even called you. I don't know if you remember, but
yeah,
I called you. Hey, how is life treating you? You know, just curious, poking your brain. And I remember asking you questions, and you know, you were the one that inspired me to, you know what, I could do this.
I'm so glad, and I'm so proud of what you guys have built. Like, it's amazing. I'm so glad we have this.
Thank you.
And y'all have made a huge impact in the music community here in the Valley. And that year, I always recommend you guys send all my students here for their repairs when they need an upgrade, because y'all are the best
at
what you do.
And it just goes back to what you're saying. Like, there shouldn't be any competition. We all depend on each other.
Yeah.
You know? And that's how it should be.
Yeah, we all need to work together. There's enough students for everyone. And really, it's about that. It's just, if our focus is just on serving others and on making everyone the best version of themselves, then there's space for everyone to be. And we can all help each other and encourage each other.
What's some piece of advice that you would give to someone that wants to go into business or a music teacher?
Take accounting. Just to be willing to take risks, but also willing to backtrack. Sometimes we go too far. We have to, and not to give up easily, because it's a process. And it wasn't always easy for me. I've had ups and downs in the business, financially, or times where I've reconsidered my choices. Like, am I doing what I really want, or am I doing the right thing, the right career path? I think as musicians, one of the most important lessons we can learn is just to be able to face rejection, because it's a subjective art. And a lot of times there's so much competition for jobs, for gigs, for places in a performing group or an orchestra. And we're constantly like auditioning, trying out, applying for things. Even me as a teacher, I faced a rejection not too long ago, and it's hard. And it threw me for that loop. Like, am I doing what I want to do? But then I go down to my studio and I see my students and I realize, like, no, I'm where I want to be. And I know that I'm making a difference. And I know that what I do helps people. And I'm just going to keep going. So yeah, that would be my advice. Don't give up. Don't be afraid to make changes or to go back to a safe space if you need to, but always remember just to keep going forward. It's like, what is it? A few steps forward, sometimes a few steps back, mm-hmm. but you just keep going and eventually you'll get there. It's just a matter of tenacity and sticking to it.
Well, Corinne, thank you. Thank you for coming in and interviewing and for being our first female musician.
I'm so honored to pave the way for the high heels of every woman who will sit in this chair after me. Thank you, guys. And thank you for what you do. I love the stories that you all bring. I've loved getting to know. I mean, I'm pretty sure I knew each person you guys have interviewed so far. Maybe not super well, but I knew of them or had met them before. And it's so nice to like get to listen to y'all pick their brain and get to know them better.
And the other thing we've been told is even the people that we think we know, we learn something about them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And just how we're all in the same journey together, just making music in whatever form it is. It's just awesome.
And being accountants.
And being accountants, yes. Take accounting in high school.
Thank you, Corey.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all. Thanks for listening.